Good morning.
Good morning.
During the summer, there's no formal religious education. Children are welcome in the service. However, if restlessness strikes, children are welcome to leave and go to the social hall, where there will be supervised activities. One of the ways we give to the larger community is by supporting local food pantries, both with cash contribution and by donation of imperishable foods. If you've brought some food to donate with you today, please bring it up to the basket by the candle table during the prelude. Next week's service will be entitled Care of the Soul. Sue Andrews will be the worship leader. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming church activities. We hope to see you. Please take a moment at this point to silence all electronics you have with you.
The universe is made up of polarities. Balance is gained by accepting light and dark in the universe and inside ourselves, rather than suppressing the negative or rejecting it as not coming from the divine. Good morning. Please take a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to those around you today.
As we light this chalice, let us contemplate. Waking up this morning, I smile. 24 brand new hours are before me. I vow to live fully in each moment and to look all beings with eyes of compassion. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our opening hymn, number 16, "'Tis a Gift to Be Simple." We will sing it twice. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to bring a message of hope and grace to an imperfect world. My name is Lois Romikas. Christy Bowden and I are your worship leaders this morning. No matter who you are or where you have come from, you are welcome here. Whether you feel like you have your life handled and it's rolling along, or whether you feel like life is a roller coaster and you're not happy about the ride, or you're somewhere in between, you are welcome here. As a UUA-recognized welcoming congregation, we welcome and affirm all people, regardless of who they love or what pronouns they use. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service, and while you're there, find out more about our church. Again, welcome. We're so glad you have chosen to be here with us today.
Cast her murky eyes toward heaven, but never stops to doubt that she must roll out to the sea, and the secret of what takes her to her silence goes with her to her death beyond eternity. And the river just keeps flowing on and on. The sun keeps going round to bring the dawn. And the life just keeps on going till it looks as though it's gone. But it really just keeps going on and on. Just when it seems the night will last forever, the sun appears to kiss awake the darkness into day. And though his life is short, he makes the journey and knows deep in his heart that there's no other way. Understand the laughter of the springtime. You have to see the summer melt away into the fall. But till you've known the endless sleep of winter, you'll never hear the cycle song of life at all. And the river just keeps flowing on and on. The sun keeps going round to bring the dawn. And the life just keeps on going till it looks as though it's gone. But really just keeps flowing on and on.
Here at LCUUC that the offering is a sacrament of the Free Church. What we mean by that is we believe it is a blessing to be able to govern and support our religious community ourselves, to make possible by our generosity everything we do to live out our shared values. Every week we lift up the spiritual value of generosity by taking an offering for the ministries of this church. Our plate then, as it is passed among us, becomes filled with the evidence of that generosity. It is our harvest gathered in each week for what most nourishes us. The ushers will now accept the gifts of our congregation. The morning offering will be most gratefully received. Thank you. of the reasons that we come together in beloved community is to share our joys and our concerns. We do this in a couple ways. You are welcome to light a candle here at the table silently before the service, or you are invited to share your thoughts with us, and Lois will light a candle for you. So would anyone who has a joy or a concern to share, please raise your hand. The ushers will bring you a microphone. Please be brief so everyone who would like to share has time to do so.
Good morning, I'm Barbara, and I have a candle of joy. I was just came back from Mayo, and it's not my lungs, and I'm on some stuff, and I should stop coughing.
This is Jerry in the back here. Would you please light a candle of joy? And the joy is for our Green Sanctuary group here at church, and it's reflected on the church in its entirety. A year and a half ago, our Green Sanctuary group partnered with the Sierra Club in their initiative on equitable transportation. And we formed a group in Waukesha County called the Waukesha County Transportation Coalition, which is a Sierra Club people, our LCUUC people, and other faith-based organizations in Waukesha County. Last year, we received a statewide award from the Sierra Club for our activities on this. The purpose of this group is to promote public transportation as an alternative to highway building to meet the needs of our people. We just got a letter last week from the Sierra Club that we have that we've been awarded the 2017 Special Achievement Award, which honors Sierra Club members for a single act of particular important dedication to the club. Now, this is a nationwide award, and the award will be presented in Washington, D.C. in September. So this is a great honor for this group, and I'm going to put in a little commercial now for the Green Sanctuary group. If anybody here is interested in environmental things, this is an opportunity for you to get involved in a group that now has national recognition.
Hi, I'm Barb. Please light a candle of joy. Our fellowship may be small in numbers, but we're mighty in spirit.
This is Heidi. I have a couple of things. Joy. My niece had a first birthday yesterday, and we had a great time. And another one, I had my first concrete deck pour, and I had fun, even though I was 160 feet in the air at the tallest bridge. But hey.
My name is Marie-Claude. I have concerned about my best friend in France who just had a very serious surgery.
And we light one last candle for those joys and sorrows which we hold deeply, but which have not been named here today.
On Joy and Sorrow from the Prophet by Khalil Gibran. And then a woman said, "Speak to us of joy and sorrow." And he answered, "Your joy is your sorrow unmasked. And the selfsame well from which your laughter rises was oftentimes filled with your tears. How else can it be? The deeper the sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. Is not the cup that holds your wine the very cup that was burned in the potter's oven? Is not the lute that soothes your spirit the very wood that was hollowed with knives? When you are joyous, Look deep in your heart, and you'll find it is only that which has given you sorrow that is giving you joy. And when you are sorrowful, look again in your heart, and you shall see that the truth that you are weeping for that which has been your delight. Some of you say, joy is greater than sorrow. And others say, nay, sorrow is the greater. But I say unto you, they are inseparable. Together they come, and when one sits with you at your board, remember that the other is asleep upon your bed. Verily, you are suspended like scales between your sorrow and your joy. Only when you are empty, are you at a standstill and balance. Here ends the first reading.
Let speaking come from deep within, from the quiet place. Let silence speak. Listen for silence. Hear the space between words. Be patient and attentive. It is the surface that is first apparent. Give time for depth to find depth. During the moment, balance the universe. Please join me in a moment of meditation, silence, or prayer. Good and bad, it's all the same. A Taoist parable to live by David G. Allen. Of all the philosophies, axioms, and pearls of wisdoms I've amassed over the year, one comes up more than any other. It's the Taoist lesson of the relative nature of good and bad. It is efficiently illustrated by the 2,000-year-old story of the good and bad fortune that follows a farmer's loss of his horse. We use the good and bad dichotomy to categorize nearly everything in our lives, events, people, food, decisions, even world history. But the lesson of the story is there is actually no such thing as good or bad. It's a false distinction and a trap that only causes psychic pain. Good things are constantly being born out of the seemingly bad and vice versa. Often, it seems it's just a matter of time until an event or decision from one category leads directly to one in the other. In the case of the farmer and his horse, first, he loses his most valuable possession. Bad. Then it returns, bringing a dozen new horses with it. Good. Then his son breaks his leg while taming one of the new horses. Bad. And then his son is spared from being conscripted into the army because of the broken leg. Good. And it keeps going like that. What is bad leads to good, leads to bad, leads to good, ad infinitum. The farmer who neither celebrates nor decries these events is wise enough to know it is all interconnected and ongoing. As he speaks in the story, who knows what is good or bad? Who knows what is good or bad is a philosophy that is useful as a framing device for the big and small events in our lives.
Just understanding the meaning makes you feel wiser. It's the philosophical equivalent of ghee or some other culinary reduction in which you've trimmed a lesson down to its essentialness. Once you know it, you can start applying it to your past, present, and projected future. And when you experience a bad event, try to imagine what possibly good could come out of it, even if it's many years from now, or several cause and effects later, or even if it just makes you feel more empathetic or prepared next time. Not convinced? Look back at something from your past. Connect the dots between that event and real happiness that came later as a result of that breakup, layoff, sickness, etc. When you experience a good event, consider what it might lead to in the future and be wary of unintended consequences of that housing bubble or dot-com boom or that business offer that may be just too good to be true. There is a reason why we regularly use the phrase, be careful what you wish for. It's because we often fail to see what the long-term effect will be born out of what we think is good for us now. And once you see the hidden good inside the bad and vice versa, like a yin and yang symbol bleeding its black and white unto one another, you can start to temper your reactions to all the seemingly good and bad. Because, like the farmer in the Taoist story, you'll better understand that no outcome is the final outcome. Everything is interconnected and ongoing. The Zen-like state of equanimity or acceptance you may one day achieve will serve you as you become less blinded by the peaks and valleys of wins and losses. Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing hymn number 1009, Meditation on Breathing.
We'll start out with the breathe in, breathe out at the bottom of the page, kind of the foundation. And then we'll go to the melody in the middle, and finally the descant part. Sing the part that you're comfortable with, that you like, and then when in doubt, follow the bouncing violin or the bouncing violinist. Here we go.
Breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out.
When people call one thing beautiful, they see something else as ugly. By calling one thing good, its opposite becomes evil. Yet having and not having produce one another. Difficult and easy balance each other. Long and short complete one another. High and low rely on each other. Pitch and tone make harmony with one another. Beginning and ending follow each other. Most of you know my 3-year-old daughter, August. She's a vivacious little thing, isn't she? I can lose myself in watching her interact with her world. It's just such a fun age. And I remember these magical years with my older kids, too. You see, I can definitely say my experience with raising August is enriched by already having raised 2 children to adulthood. Hindsight, as they say, is 20/20. And while there are many factors that make this parenting endeavor totally new and unique, I find that there are some universal truths, if you will, that remain as valuable to me today as they were my first time around. The truth that I draw on most is one that I've come to understand through my experience of raising children, but it is applied to every aspect of my living. It is this. There really is no such thing as good and bad, or right and wrong. They are purely human concepts that provide parameters of acceptable and unacceptable. They are traps that are easy to fall into when we are spending our days teaching our children the rules of life. Good and bad don't exist in nature. They are merely subjective, socially constructed labels, value judgments regarding things and people and places that we perceive to be of benefit or detriment to our own interests. What does exist in nature are polarities. They flow consistently into and out of one another. Consider day and night. The continual progression of the sun and the moon give way to one another. Consider death and life. A seed must fall from a plant and die to produce new seeds. And even though polarities are naturally occurring, it is a difficult concept for us to grasp because it removes the hard lines that we as humans want to live within. Clearly defined ideas of right and wrong or good and bad make it easy for us to understand our world and our experiences. Fluidity is messy. It requires subjectivity and attention to nuances, instead of broad stroke opinions and assumptions about the rules we will all live by. In a universe of constantly flowing energy, we cannot box good and keep it and grow it and have it forever. We cannot box bad and toss it out to sea, never to be seen again. Barry Posner, and author on polarities, posits that they are not a problem to be solved, but an interdependent cyclical flow to be managed. To illustrate the concept, he tells of a conflict that broke out among people who were trying to perfect a meditation technique. Some maintained that while breathing was important, the action of exhaling was far superior, for it allowed the meditator to discharge anything that was getting in the way of deep meditation. Others were equally stubborn in their belief that inhaling is superior, for that is the action which brings life into the body. Each group argued for their position, and then they crossed a line spurred on by their own certainty. No inhaling, only exhaling. No, no exhaling, only inhaling. Finally, after they all passed out from an excess of one or the other, their respiration once again found its natural rhythm. And they came to their senses, both literally and figuratively. Polarities have two poles, Posner says, each with negative and positive aspects. They are interdependent opposites with energy that flows between them. When that energy can flow naturally, the poles are in balance. But balance is lost when that energy is manipulated. Too much upside of one pole will create an excess downside in another. Posner gives an example of this where thinking and feeling are two opposite poles. And I've asked my very good friends, Sue and Linda, to come up and help me demonstrate this. So if Sue is my thinking pole, she is aware of cause and effect. She's rational, logical, impartial. But she might be critical, even cold. She might have a hard time relating to others. Now, conversely, Linda, my feeling pole, is compassionate and empathetic. She wears her heart on her sleeve, as you can see. She understands what's important to others and is in touch with her own emotions, but she might also be unpredictable or compulsive, irrational. Now, when our energy flows naturally from one end of this continuum to the other, things are in balance. It all works together, as long as I don't trip over anybody. But if I'm to start thinking too much, or circling around Sue here, for example, I am going to experience either a positive or negative effect. And even if it feels positive over here, there's going to be a ramification. It can be problematic because there's a lack of energy over here. And that is going to affect how we live in the world. Okay, thanks both. They're good sports, aren't they? Now, this is, to say the least, a simplification of an extremely complex phenomenon. But I hope that you'll find it helpful if you, at times, can't seem to let go of that feeling of being stuck. As thinking, feeling people, we develop expectations from our life experiences. And as thinking, feeling people, we associate those things with how they make us feel, and then we label them. It's human nature. But why? Author and public speaker Brené Brown says it's an inability or refusal to feel vulnerable. She says of her own experiences, "I try to outsmart vulnerability by making things certain, definite, black and white, good and bad. My inability to lean into the discomfort of vulnerability limited the fullness of important experiences that are wrought with uncertainty, love, belonging, trust, and creativity, to name a few. In the most basic terms, these labels are survival tools. Good and bad refer to what keeps us alive and what might get us dead. Without these reference points, we are vulnerable to the elements, to predators, to illness. My mom often tells a story about me as a toddler when I had a sudden interest in electrical outlets. I'd work the plastic protective covers, pry them out of place so I could explore the openings with my little fingers. My parents would exclaim, "No, bad, owies." Well, it didn't take long, my mom says, for me to understand those labels. And before she knew it, I was walking around the house yelling at all the outlets, "No, bad, owies." These labels are crucial to not only our survival, but our ability to live in relationship with others. A common understanding of what we can or will accept and that which we wish to avoid allows us to relate to one another. I remember a girl I went to high school, her name was Katina. I realized today that she surely lived with a developmental disability, autism perhaps. But as a super self-conscious, awkward teenager, I just thought she was a jerk. She had little ability to read others, and she certainly did not adhere to implicit social standards of good and bad or right and wrong. One day in gym class, where I particularly felt vulnerable to the judgment of my peers, Katina happily, even kindly, in a weird way, pointed out my acne to a group of girls I was standing with. "You have a big one on your chin, right there," she said, laughing, smiling. I thought I would die of embarrassment. I was hurt and angry, and from that day on, I avoided her like the plague. I'm sad to say that it was obvious that many others had similar experiences, and they responded in much the same way. When I think of Katina now, I think she looked like the loneliest person in the world. If I could, I would go back and sit with her and talk and laugh with her. I would let her be her, oblivious to all of my expectations about our interactions. Clearly, labels play an important role in our life stories. They aren't necessarily good or bad in and of themselves. But we can get in trouble with labels when we attach expectations to them. Shakespeare once said, "Expectation is the root of heartache," and I have found this to be true. Not only for the expector, but also the expectee. Expectations force us to contrive and manipulate our life experiences. They rob us of an opportunity to just be as the universe designed us to be. Any of us who are parents likely know this to be true. The line between guide and engineer is blurred for parents by social pressures to raise upstanding, law-abiding, mainstream, contributing members of society. Much of our identity becomes intertwined with who our children are, and our expectations run rampant. We set the rules of acceptable and unacceptable for our children, and we teach them to do the same. Acceptable. Somewhere between good and bad is acceptable. I find it to be a lovely place where we Westerners could stand to spend a little more time. Now, before you think I'm suggesting we all just settle and you tune me out at that notion, let me say this. What I'm talking about here is the idea that we let our life experiences be what they are. We accept them. We don't subscribe to the idea that we can only be happy when life is good. We don't set expectations that bad will never happen. Too often we scramble between good and bad, We hang out where life is good as we've defined it, working diligently to make it more good. And then we run right past acceptable when something bad happens, and we work to fix this all up so that we can get back to good as quickly as possible. And when we can't, when we're overwhelmed with circumstances that keep us on this bad side of acceptable, we find ways to go visit happy. We get there via love interests, or babies, or pets, perhaps via careers or hobbies, or drugs, or alcohol, or shopping. We ride the train of dependency and addiction back and forth between where we want to live all day, every day, and where we have to go to fix its polar opposite. When we reside in acceptable, though, we allow both good and bad to exist. We don't feel a need to manipulate the energy of our universe. We perceive goodness, and we live it, own it, feel it, with an awareness that it will change. We perceive badness, and we live it, own it, feel it, with an awareness that it too will change. We don't attach to the goodness, and we don't detach from the badness. It is in this place of acceptable or acceptance where we find balance, where our energy flows consistently and naturally, where we live in accordance with the universe. Acceptance helps us to balance as on a fulcrum, and something remarkable happens when we do. Our energy fluidly passes to and from those poles, all the while making subtle adjustments and guiding corrections. We no longer have the mind space for judging our experiences. We are focused on the nuances of remaining balanced. We are in the here. We are in the now. We lose the urge to define good and bad. We realize everything that happens, happens because it is a step in a beautiful, infinite dance. And we put on our ballet slippers or our tap shoes or our Michael Jackson glove, and we dance. Peace. Oh, she's subtle. We have time for a polylog. Thanks. Dense as a rock. Please, if you have a thought on this that you would like to share, raise your hand, and Jim or Kaya will pass you the microphone.
Hello, my name is Karen. I'm a visitor today. I have two daughters who are young adults, and the path of a young female going into young adulthood takes about a decade or more. And there's a lot of highs and lows, and a lot of, am I doing the right thing? Am I making a mistake? I can't stand this. I want more pleasure. I don't want to grow up. And so they're entangled in exactly what you're talking about, is having perspective on what's good and what's bad, and accepting that middle ground and going back and forth without falling to pieces, which is what young women like to do as they're maturing. So it's very good stuff. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi. As a young woman, I can extremely relate to that. And one of my largest problems is always being out of balance, especially with school. I like to go way to the extreme of loading on work and having extreme expectations for myself, which I love this talk because the minute that it's good to set goals, and I think I get goals and expectations mixed up a lot. It's good to set a goal, but your expectation shouldn't be to achieve it, really, because if you don't achieve it, then you feel absolutely horrible. And my teacher, Mrs. Beal, she came back from cancer this year, and she is such a bubbly, happy person. And she sat me down one day, and she said, Claudia, you have to be happy in the moment in whatever way you can, because the big bad will come one day. And I know the big bad. I've been there. I went through it for 2 years, and I didn't have time to be happy. So if you cherish the moments you have now and try and find your happy now and get in the balance now, when the bad comes, it won't seem so bad.
Yeah. Thank you.
And this is Jim. I just want to thank you for a very wonderful service. And I often say, which the reading on the front of the order of service and much mm-hmm. of what you said, that both in my recovery and in my life, the foundations are acceptance and gratitude. And those are two things that I struggled with so much in my life before coming to terms with them.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I think a lot of us do.
Hi, this is Matt. On the way here today, I saw a bumper sticker that said, if you can dream it, you can achieve it. And I was thinking to myself, does that really apply to everyone? Can you really dream it and achieve it? If everybody does that, does it work out? No.
Yeah.
And it doesn't balance out because maybe 2 or 3% of people dream it and achieve it. So that leaves the other 97% of us depressed and going, oh my God, I'm a complete failure. It's not balanced.
Right.
So this dovetails right in with that.
Yeah.
So I think we're really setting up a lot of our kids for failure by having that attitude.
Yeah.
Because if they're expecting to be the greatest and to get a trophy for everything and, be the elite, but then they get to be 21 years old and they're not, what do they do then? They feel like crap and they feel mm-hmm. depressed. And
their self-identity can be compromised.
Completely,
true. Yeah.
Totally ruined.
Thank you.
Hi, Barb again. Thank you so much, Christy. This is just what my soul needed this morning. And, I've been kind of chemically out of balance in my body, and I had just let my mind just go crazy with it. And, it's all in the balancing act. It's not in getting, you never get there. We right. never get there as badly as we all want it. So thank you for your words today.
Oh, and it's Barbara over here again, too. I've had some real challenges starting quite young with health issues. Not overly severe, but severe enough. And when I look back at it, and I did that fairly recently, every one of them actually led to something that stopped me from doing something that would have been much more detrimental than the original was. A good example is I had blood clots between the kids, and then was my second one. I was in the hospital for 2 weeks. And there was a period of time where I thought was I going to make it or not. But that kept me from being able to take birth control pills. And look at all the problems those birth control pills cause. So I think, it was a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, yeah.
And that happened so often when you really look back.
Yeah, thank you. I think we have time for one more comment. Did I see one over here?
Well, I really appreciate your talk, Christy, and this has been a really good day and a really good service, and I don't want to be the heavy, so forgive me in advance. I think all of this applies to almost everything in life, the good, the bad that we want to talk about. But just as a challenge to take it a step further, and there's children in the audience, so I'm going to try to be very careful. Can we apply this to the really, really, really bad stuff? Mm.
Yeah.
The most unimaginably bad things that happen to children, for example. As a survivor, I've spent my entire adult life trying to recover. And not all people who experience this survive. And not just that, but things like the earthquake in Haiti or what happened in Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I have survived through my faith. This is a faith-based community, so I think we can talk about that. Because of my faith, I've been able to survive. And so I think that it is possible to apply Christie's talk and the service and say that, yes, even in the worst of circumstances, even in the darkest bad and the darkest evil, there is the possibility of light and goodness balancing that greatest of evil. And to bring, as I brought up Haiti, even immediately after that earthquake, the Haitian people, the Haitian survivors, were dancing in the streets and celebrating their survival. And to think about the strength of those people and their ability to do that, there is in the human spirit and through their spirituality and whatever it is that they and going into the slaves and how they survived 300 plus years of slavery and now can continue, you know, being part of our community and what they're still facing now, the African American people and their spirit, you know. So expand your thoughts to even, you know, when really bad things happen, when God lets bad things happen to good people, why?
Sure.
Those questions that come up over and over again.
I, in preparing for this, was often reflective of, like, Viktor Frankl and Anne Frank and the trials that these remarkable people have been through and yet were able to, you know, maintain a sense of, you know, acceptance and balance and, you know, and just an understanding that what is happening is bigger than them. And I think, thank you so much for sharing such a personal story. And I definitely, you know, I agree. It's very difficult to apply these ideas to. It's just so much bigger and so much more impactful. So thank you for sharing. Okay, any other reminders for me? No? Okay, good.
We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. Please rise in body or spirit in joining singing our closing hymn this week, number 6, As Long As I Have Breath.
Yes.
Darkness is not to be destroyed or hidden or ignored, nor is lightness. They are to be balanced, and so that we may know wholeness. We need both, dark and light, light and dark. Peace, and may it be so.